these negotiations, I suppose that there's ample provisions in the plan to take care of such a thing as if we diverted the Bear River over into the Snake River drainage.
The plan doesn't contemplate that.
I don't think the plan should. The plan should consider that. But the changes to the water plan that are reflection of the agreement principally relate to the water that Idaho Power had claimed, which has been regarded as appropriated water. The new criteria version of the water right can't apply to any unappropriated water. Only applies to those waters that are at 22. So if new waters were diverted into the system, they would be regarded as unappropriated waters in the state of Idaho, and they would be available for appropriation in the system.
And the board will take care of that. Then.
That's a good point.
Mr. Gray, I'll expand on some things I said earlier that sort of relate to this. The 3,900 is a magic number, as I like to call it. Any user who is in place and proved beneficial use before the signing agreement is safe from water quality even if the flow goes below 3,900. If the flow goes below 3,900 sometime in the future, Idaho Power will call upon the state to supply the water and the new appropriators. People who get their water right after the signing agreement will be the ones that the department comes to supply that water. So in a real 1930s drought situation, we don't think we'll be at 3,900 under existing conditions because we've taken existing development, run it back to the computer, put in the weather cycle of the 30s, and we come down to 4,500. It matches what we've got. So the existing user, in theory and according to the agreement, is protected from call, even if it goes below 3,900. It's only the person whose water right is due to the signing agreement to be called upon to supply water. Yes, sir.
You just made a statement there. Anything signed or before the agreement. Now, what about the minutes that were completely finished during that? I'm in that folder back there.
The language in the agreement says. Beneficial use has to be proven. If you could fill out a proof of use card and have enough people to back you up that you're using it, you'd be okay. If you're not, you're stuck and you're going to have to meet those new criteria of legislation that signed this bill. You would be processed first before any new applicants began.
I have part of this in my permit requirement. Got a permit for two wells. One well was in service prior to this.
Mr. Director, can you help me on that?
Yeah. The one that was in would be covered. If the other one is not in and has not been developed, then it would not be covered. It would be subject.
Yeah. I guess the answer is whatever beneficial use you can prove, you're covered.
If Mr. Chairman, you know, that covering all those uses that are presently being made is an additional reason for the general adjudication of the Snake Basin, because all those uses are identified and they're proven, and the power company and everybody else then will have to live by all those uses. They can't come back later and say, well, no, that wasn't being used, because we'll have gone through the process of identifying all those, and yes, it has been. Those uses that would not be subjected to that 3,900 CFS limit.
Bill, did you have a question?
Well, I was just going to ask about that, how the adjudication and that day of October 24th, is that right?
Which date? Signing the framework or signing the agreement?
The signing of the agreement.
The agreement, October 25th.
Okay. So anybody who has filed prior to that is going to be all right. But if the adjudication, say, starts on March 1, what about anybody who falls in that time frame there?
What about what an adjudication does and how simple it can be and how complicated it can be. The language of the agreement specifies that users who can prove beneficial use before October 25th, 1984 will be protected by the agreement, and the power is agreed not to call for water from them. The mechanics of adjudication are fairly straightforward. The Department of Water Resources goes to the court, the court directs the department to proceed with adjudication. The department takes its records and it either through the court sends notices to either all people in the district or the basin, or water rights in the basin, or landowners in the basin. Not clear yet which of those different mailing techniques and pumps are used. But in theory, everybody in the basin who is or could be using water is contacted by the department. The department has staff that goes around it, every little county courthouse and other places actually. And they have the water rights for that area with them. And they ask the landowner or water user to come in and talk to them about their water rights. The department shows the individual what they have on record for management laws about your water rights and your use of water. Key things, of course, are land irrigated, water you diverge, when that diversion first took place, and when you prove beneficial use of it. And then the department guides us down and says, yeah, this looks, it agrees with what we have, and if you're happy, we're happy, this is how we're going to follow the court. Providing you're not using twice as much water as you're legally entitled to, or something like that. The department compiles all this information that's been checked with the individual people. In some cases, the field staff will actually go out and verify them on the acreage you're irrigating the one to make sure the records are complete and as accurate as it can be. They're then given to the report to the court, and they're listed in chronological order so that once the water master, or if a water master were ever in place, you would know who to shut off visiting the user in the area. The Payette River system is just ending up in adjudication, and there were 9,000 some water users in that system, and we're down now to about 11 people who have not agreed or compromised with the Department of Water Rights. Anybody who objects to what the department finds tells the court this is a bunch of nonsense, and I claim something different. And they end up being decided by the court. As I said, 9,000, we're down there. Handful yet, and that's what's theoretically going to happen in the whole Snake Basin. Now, the things that are different about the Snake Basin from previous adjudication the department has done is, one, adjudications have always been paid for out of the state general fund. But when we're talking about doing something as massive as the Snake Basin, with an estimated cost of $28 million, the state general fund can cut it. One of the reasons it takes 10 years to do adjudication on a single small river like the Leon, because the general fund gives the department enough money for one or two people per year to work on something. We're going to get the whole Snake Basin done in any reasonable time. It's going to take more than one or two people. So the proposed legislation would provide that those water users in the area being adjudicated would have to pay some fee to help fund the adjudication. The other thing that's different about the Snake Basin is that it's one of the first steps the state is going to seriously take forcing the federal government to quantify their so-called reserve rights. The water plan asks that the federal government and Indian tribes quantify the amount of water they claim. It's done that for, since 76. Even provides that the Department of Water Resources will provide technical assistance to Indian tribes. Never been asked for. In Fort Hall, they have been for the last few years trying to determine their own water needs. But the only way you can force them participate in state adjudication, state court, is to do what's called a system adjudication, a general systems adjudication. There is a law which was passed in 52 or 54, I think it's a federal law, that says as long as the state is doing a systems adjudication, the Indians and the federal government participate. Now you realize that the federal government claims they have a reserved water right for all the national forests in the basin. They have it for Imigal and for Bayou. And the Indian Reservation itself. Federal government claims they have a water claim. They have not yet told the state what it is for those lands. The priority of that claim general, in all court cases, have been settled at the date that land was withdrawn from the public domain. 34 Hole Indian Reservation in the 1860s. That's a pretty good priority date. All we got to do now is find out how much water they claim. We've never been able to do that. And if we're going to try to get to the river to the Nats on, to the point that the department would surely like to see a little excess water we can call on when we make a mistake, we'd like to know how much water the Fed is in this one. If we start at Lewiston, as the proposed adjudication does, we're including the salmon, clear water, and all snake range from where it basically leaves the state. That, to us, is a system-wide adjudication, and we think that there's half the participant in our court under those stipulations. If they'll agree to participate, and we can start at Weezer, or we can start at Swan Falls itself, the Murphy Gate, so much the better. I can agree with somebody who lives in the Salmon River drainage or Clearwater drainage that the water rights problem at Swan Falls Dam doesn't have much to do with that. And why should they participate? Why should they have to pay? If we can get to Swan Falls Dam, fine. But I think if the adjudication is going to be really valuable, and if we're going to try and manage the river down to some little minuscule amount of water, we have to know what the feds want out of that system, because they may come and claim it in some way today. And it would be really nice if we resolve it in state court rather than federal court. So that's why the adjudication at least is proposed to start at Lewiston. Because it's so big, that's why we really need help to pay for it.
I think we ought to have a little more clarification on these two words, insubordination and subordination, between Idaho Power and Agriculture.
Okay. I'll try.
What the present picture is. What is it? Is there any, has there been any consensus reached in that?
Okay. I don't think you can get three different water lawyers to agree what the word subordination means. Well, I don't pretend to give you a legal definition, but I will say that the general population in Idaho assumes that subordination means you can take away someone's water right for another specified use and not compensate them for it. That's the general understanding that most people of what subordination means. Now, Idaho Power had subordinated the right at Hell's Canyon. They agreed that they would not protest upstream development in agricultural and municipal river against their water right at Hell's Canyon complex. And for 25 some years, both Idaho Power and the state of Idaho operated under the assumption that that subordinated their rights and other structures upstream. Supreme Court said, no, they didn't subordinate it. They only subordinated the right at those specific dams in Hell's Canyon. In part of the agreement, trying to reach a compromise, the negotiators introduced the word subordinable. I think it was a bad decision on their part. But as lawyers, it didn't necessarily make good sense. So they've introduced this new term. And what the agreement, I think, basically specifies. Let's start at Swan Falls first of all. It says that the 3,900 and the 5,600 are going to be protected by the state water plan. Therefore, Idaho Power's water right is not subordinated below that level. That means that Idaho Power will be assured those flows forever. Now, negotiators introduced the term subordinatable for anything that Idaho Power claimed above the new minimum flows. And what that is intended to mean is the state holds this water in trust. It's still Idaho Power's water. When the state wants to give it to somebody else, it's subordinated, and that person has the right to that water. No cost to him in terms of the fact that he's still owned by Idaho Power, or no cost to the state. Now, in terms of Idaho Power's claim and other structures up the river, some of the dams, their water rights were clearly subordinated, no question in the state's mind, and probably in the legal sense that those dams, they were not guaranteed their flow, and they couldn't do much about it. But at a couple of the other structures, they had unsubordinated rights still. And the agreement says that as long as 3,900 CFS goes past the gauge of Murphy sometime, Idaho Power won't complain about how much water they're getting of any of their other structures. So in essence, what it's done is taken some unsubordinated rights to those structures and subordinated them. I know if I can answer your question. I can tell us a little
bit. So I understood it. That was brought up because of the drought areas, or the drought years that might come along, when maybe all of us would have to give up a little bit. Well, the argument, as I heard it some time ago, was that we had to guarantee that 33, the figure 33 going over Swan Falls, if that's all there was in the river, that's it, it didn't have to be delivered that way.
No, that's an incredible. Who was telling you that story, but it's totally wrong. For example, I guess the best way to do it is to say that the agreement clearly specifies that Idaho Power will take no action against anybody who has a water right older than October 25th, 1984. If the flow goes below 3,900, they will only come after the new people who come after them. I mean, juniors in the signing of the agreement, because what the state is basically doing is saying, as of the signing agreement, we will protect that flow of 3,900. Not against people who are senior and fine. I think that was the same thing that was true of the state water plan when it was originally put in place. They said 3,300 minimum flow year round. If they came to a water shutoff problem when we weren't meeting 3,300, the priority date of establishing that flow was only in 76. People who were in place with an older water rate probably been protected. Certainly under the agreement they would be. And that is really, I think, fairly serious consideration for a person who has got one well yet to do and is going to be under the new system, if at some future date they have a long drought period. And the department is wrong in the rest of this. They're going to be one of the people that could be called and be shut off. Whereas anybody in place before they've been assigned won't be called, no matter how low.
How come some of these here claims can still exist on the river and they never have to show the emphasis of use? Agree with that.
I get in trouble here, but I'll say that the Department of Water Resources doesn't have enough staff to go around and really check out every beneficiary. They're given a piece of paper when you file for a water right nowadays, and you put down the date and put your water to use. And hopefully some one of our people comes out and checks on it.
I mean, questions for the federal government.
Oh, you mean the reserve water right claims? Oh, boy. Okay, that's a complicated problem. And what part of the problem has been is that this has been decided in federal court. The federal government has said that we withdrew this land from the public domain. We had some special use in mind for that land, and at that time we therefore assumed and claimed that we had the water for that use. Our Indian tribes have been back and forth in court a good many times. And the federal courts have ruled that when an Indian reservation was withdrawn, water sufficient to irrigate all the irrigable lands on our reservation taken out at the same time. INEL is a good example. That reservation was withdrawn to test nuclear reactors, and they could come in and keep showing they were testing new nuclear reactors, as opposed to they had to have some kind of claim for water for that purpose. They have refused to quantify those rights unless they get hard into a systems adjudication, general adjudication of the whole system. As I said, we've asked them. Since the water plan was first put in place, and we've asked them in two different forums to quantify their water rights for years and years and years. I think this is one of the only ways I can see it happening in the near future. Wow, they're not going to do that. For a long time, it looked like they were never going to quantify and we were going to try and manage the water in the state without knowing what they might take at some future date. This adjudication is one way to force them. It's one way to force them into our state court system. That's no guarantee we're going to like the results in the justification in terms of what they claim and get. But I think it's better that a state judge does it than a federal judge. I think the threat is hanging over Idaho right now that the Indians, for example, or the Forest Service, because I know the Fort Hall people have looked at theirs, and I know that the Forest Service, at least some of the Forest Service, has looked at the amount of water that they actually need for the management of the forest. And there, the threat hangs over us that they'll go to the federal court and have the federal government set the buying of water that they're entitled to. That, to me, is one of the big reasons for trying to go with this certification as proposed here.
Yes, sir.
I don't know whether to put this in the form of a question or a statement in either direction, but it's one of these situations if the water could be held upriver. We know that, like last spring, we had a horrendous runoff that just went right on through everything. Has there been any design maybe diverting some of this water upstream, like recharging the aquifer? Looks like to me to figure out a way of holding this water upstream and it helps everyone.
Yes, the answer to that is yes, and let me expound on that. Yes, studies made of midstream storage and aquifer storage. And let's talk about the midstream storage. After the board is going to be estimating the determination of the maximum storage now. One of the few good dam sites left in the upper state is Glen Cranor site, for example. The department suggests like analyzing flow data that might fill once in 7 years or less. The cost for new construction stored water is such that agricultural interests can afford it. The federal government is now reducing the amount that they contribute to any kind of project. If there's unallocated water in Ryrie, which is for sale for $8 an acre for the water, it costs up to $40 an acre for more to be involved in new river storage right now. But the board, through the department, is looking at a new storage structure on the Weesa River. And the only way they can adequately come up with enough money to that piece of construction is if some of that water is paid for by the federal government to provide water for Madden's fisheries. Flood control, recreation, and irrigation won't pay for it. The idea of artificial recharge, yes, we've done something. The department, in conjunction with some of the people over at St. Anthony, have done some experiments over there. It seemed to work. The local people were happy. Only good ground to dump this excess water out on is BLM ground, and they objected to the wet spring mud bank summer, and wouldn't let the land be used for that purpose. There is some artificial recharge going on in the Rupert or Jerome area, and out of interest from the trout farmers who were concerned about the volume of flow coming out of the spring, they tried to form and had authority to form district. This past spring was the first time they tried to put water in the ground there. It worked. We can assume there will be a continued effort this spring to put more water in the ground. Folks down at Oakley are looking at an official recharge project. They're in one of our critical groundwater roads and they're on the water getting so low already that they're concerned that they'll be going out of business in the gym business. So they're looking at means to import water into the area. One of the potential ways to store water would be through artificial recharge. So people are looking at it. Let's talk about some problems with artificial recharge. As soon as that water goes in the ground, you basically lose control of the property of the state. Trout farmers don't care because they're concerned about what comes out of town in springs. Any water they can get in the ground, that means at least as much or more might come out of town in springs. So they're willing to put up some money. The average farmer is a lot of money, if all he's going to see is the 6-inch or 1-foot range in the water there. Another real problem is water quality problems. Probably most of you know the EPA was considering making this thing an actual sole source effort. It is, in most technicians' minds, easily contaminated, and they've got areas of raw salt out there where you can get in the ground without a water table, and it doesn't get filtered very much. If you want to put any kind of volume of water in the ground at all, you've got to have some place like raw salt, so you can get a lot of it in and have a hurry. So you've got a real water quality problem. This particular experiment that I've done last spring and will be probably running again this year, state asked for water samples to be taken of the water going out to the recharge area as well as from wells in here. It's a real concern that you don't want anybody who wants to pay for the irrigation, artificial recharge, to be involved in it. Certainly doesn't want to be liable if somebody gets sick drinking water. It's expensive to get the water out there. You're not sure you're going to get all the benefits out of it, and you're liable for anything that's wrong. The only way we're going to see any real big artificial recharge would probably be if the state or one of the major districts moved in. And if you can't use existing facilities, you probably can't justify it. You certainly can't justify it when you can go buy water for $2.50 and you can put down the water back. Well, I think the Swan Falls thing, if nothing else, forced us to recognize we're running out of water. We better be more careful about how we use it. We better use it better if we can. I think it also says that things aren't going to get any better down the road. We may be entering into one of these climatic cycles, and the people at Bud Lake are going to get more and more water, and we may have lots of water in all our reservoirs. Mayfield may be here for another year. That would be really nice in terms of what things are going to be like for a few years. I don't think we can count on that. We certainly can't count on it for the next 50 or 60 years. Sometime we're going to be water short, and sometime the water's worth more money for the food. Or if it should be charged, probably get more consideration.
This is just another thought or idea. Who's paying the bill to recharge all of these oil reservoirs underground, aquifers? All this oil we're buying up and storing underground in the old basins of oil. Well, the taxpayers are doing that, right?
Two different situations. In the so-called naval petroleum reserves, taxpayers do. In some instances, it's conceivable that an oil company could be doing it. But I don't know of any case where that's going on. The only ones that I know about are oil was bought at land surface and put back in the ground until the federal government is stockpiling against prices.
We've almost got enough storage, oil storage there to last us, what, 90 days?
90 days. Yeah,
we bought in reserve. Now what I'm looking at is this. If that's being paid by the taxpayers, then the taxpayers could help recharge these aquifers.
Okay, and that's a good point. Bring up two points. One, if all this federal money can only put 90 days worth of oil in there, it shows the problems of trying to recharge water also in terms of the volumes of water every day. But the other point is legitimate. I think at some point in the future, the state may want to take general fund monies for artificial return to water. Certainly they won't do it today. I mean, they won't fund the Department of Resources today. But the federal government is interested in this problem, and it's not because of the situation in Idaho, or I guess you can't say any specific state, because they get in trouble when they pump dollars into one state and all the other states want their share of the pie. The overall line for which starts to Texas is the one that's been going down in terms of hundreds of feet over the last 10 years or so. The farmers in Texas. Along that goal, which is a mission I'm concerned about. The federal government's appropriated, I think it's $5 million to take a look at his artificial recharge. I would certainly hope that the water board and the legislature can do a better job of planning than we're in that situation in the near future. I could see, as I said earlier, when water gets more expensive, and its benefits are recognized more and more, it's state may as well have to have a general fund. Either contribute towards these ARPA future funds, or I can do it. And I know the water board has given grants to folks at Oakland.
Yes, sir.
Question on the Oakland project now. If that's going down, in which we all know it is constantly, what is there any cutoff? Is there any protection for any one above the other? What's going to happen if that keeps going down to where those wells go dry? Because there used to be when we drilled those wells, there was a date on there and they took the log of it and so forth. Is there anything now to protect the early drillers, or so to speak?
Yes, there is. It's not a very nice thing. It's very likely to happen. The department has met with the people down there and said, basically, we have a recent U.S. Geological Survey study. Our own records indicate the water levels are continuing to climb. We'll give you a little bit more grace period, but if you can't get this artificial recharge or some kind of water importation scheme in place in the next couple of years, the department's going to go to court and ask for adjudication. Numbers in that USGS report are really scary in terms of the overdraft that's going on. And if that happens, the court's probably going to order over half the users in the basement to shut up. And it will be strictly in a time priority date. Speaking as a groundwater geologist, that's not a darn good way to do it. I'd love to see them shut off so that I spread out my existing pumpers over the whole area so I kind of balance out the defining aquifer. The Idaho law provides, and the director is, as I say, is talk with the people. Seriously concerned about asking for adjudication, specifically that area.
Question. Is there any way in your geology study that tells whether one area in that area is particularly source of that more than another? Could you govern that any by your study of that and tell which ones are the ones that are, you might say, the major ones for drawing it?
No, I don't think that I can do that. I think it's a very obvious problem when you put three or four wells within a mile of each other and the next well is 3 miles away. He's not doing as much damage as these guys are close together. What actually happens when you pump an individual well and get cone depression because you're trying to lower the pressure head of the water system in the actually circle around an individual well. You get two wells close together, their cones of depression overlap, and the effect in that overlap area is to add the two together and it goes down like gangbusters. So the ideal way to develop any aquifer is to have what's called well spacing regulations to keep the well spread out as far apart as you can to develop the full aquifer. It's the little I know, and I've not worked directly in the area except when I first came to work with the Department of Hydrological Measures and Monitoring. The geology is fairly uniform. Don't seem to be too many geologic things controlling it within the area that they've identified. I think one well bad as another. The problem is when you get them too close together, and you really see a dramatic decline because they interfere with one another.
It doesn't seem to be that way. In referring to those and the tests that they've taken, it's only a short distance from some of those wells to the other, and there's really a difference in the level of water.
I don't know what you're talking about. I can say that there's actual boundary between the Cottonwood area, for example, and the West Oakland Fan, as we call it, where there appears to be no interconnection at all. And a function of water level in a well depends to some degree upon well construction and the actual depth of the two wells adjacent to each other. So that well construction, even if two wells are constructed at the same depth and perforated against the same portion of the aquifer, the well girl does a better job on one than the other, we get more water and less decline.
Any more questions? We'd like to stress once again that we will take written testimony until February 22nd. And the testimony should be sent to the Idaho Water Resource Board, State House, Boise, Idaho, ZIP 83720. And we thank you very much for coming, and we thank you very much for your questions and your testimony.